Today's daf in Besechet Chulin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Kuf Yud Tet. And we're holding seven lines up. Well, we're actually holding further, but I'd like to start seven lines up from the bottom on Kuf Yud Ches Amud Beis, so that we can get right back into the issues over here. So we've been talking about the differences between Yad and Shomer. We've been talking about a Shomer that acts like a Yad, such as the cases of the ore of the Nevela, where it can only conduct and it cannot be Mitztaref. And yesterday we got to the issue of what is the minimum shiur that will allow the concept of Yad to kick in. Because, I mean, look, Lamaisa Yad is the idea of having a handle on something that is meaningful. What is the shiur that gives it a din of a handle? I mean, it can't be just like a tiny, almost invisible piece. Now you got a big handle on it. So here we have a machlokes between Rav and Rabbi Yochanan, starting seven lines up from the bottom. Omar Rav, ein yad lepachot mikizayit ve'ein shomer lepachot mikipol. Now, don't let this confuse you, because the question of the kizayit, or the shiur that would be necessary for Kabbalah Stuma, which could be a kibetza, are not necessarily related. Because the way that Rashi understands the sugya, and that's the way we'll go with it because it's the easiest, is that the yad could be connected to one piece of food which is embedded in other food, so that together with all the food, you've got a kibetza. But that doesn't mean that you've got a kizayit necessarily on the one piece that's connected to the yad. Maybe you just have a small amount connected to the yad. So what we're looking at is how much needs to be connected to the yad. So Rav says you need to have at least a kizayit connected to the yad, and the shomer, in order for it to kick in, being as a shomer actually has a very powerful impact on being able to be mitztaref, and it is viewed as part of the food itself, you don't need a kizayit for that, because as long as it needs protection, even if it's just a ful, which is like a bean, that would be sufficient. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan says, you don't even need that. Yesh yad lepachot mikizayit, yesh shomer lepachot mikaful, and there's no particular shear that you need to have here. Meitve. So now the question is, it seems that both Rav and Rabbi Yochanan are going to have a very rough time explaining the following machlokas tanoim in a way that would allow them to work out like all of the tanoim. They're going to have to bite the bullet and accept the fact that this is, in fact, a machlokas tanoim, which they cannot really work out for themselves entirely. Take a look at this case. Now, this case is an extension of what we've been talking about. We've been talking about the din of yad for tuma chamura in terms of the vela. But we never talked about shomer for an avela that acts as a shomer, because remember, it's only hanogea b'nivlata. So the din, therefore, of the avela is specifically excluded from the concept of an actual shomer being mitztaref. However, other types of tumot chamura. So, for instance, we have tumas meis. That's much more chamur. And it doesn't say over there that there's any kind of limitation on the din of shomer when it comes to tumat meat. So I don't know. There may well be at least the ability of the shomer to be acting as a yad when it comes to the meat. That's for sure, because that would be true even of nevela. Let's talk about still the differences between Rav and Rabbi Yochanan as to what defines a yad or what defines a shomer, because that will be relevant. If it's not really a shomer, it can't act as a yad either. So we're moving on to a completely different topic here in this braita, which is related to the dinim of tumas ohel, which of course is only possible with human remains. So what we're talking about over here is if you have two human bones, shtei atzamot, and they have some actual human remains on them, each one of them has a chatzi zayit. Now, you need a kizayit min hamet in order to be metame ba'ohel. Here you only have a chatzi zayit on each one of these bones. V'yichnis rosheihem hashniyim is what it should say. You have the remains on one side of the bone. The other side of the bone is just dry bone. And you put it into that part, the part that has nothing on it, you put that into a ohel. And you take another bone that also only has a chatzitzayit, you put that into an ohel. Then the din is, if the bayit is ma'ahil aleihem, so if this house contains both of those under the same part of the ohel, then the whole bayit is going to be tameh with tumat meit because of the tziruf of the shiur of kizayit min hameit through these two bones. A bayit tameh. That is the opinion of the Tanakhama. Yehuda ben Ekusel Omer, Mishum Rabbi Yaakov, that doesn't make any sense. Heich shnei atzamot mitztarfim lekizayit. How the heck could you possibly have a chatzizayit on each one? I agree if it had a kizayit, yes. And of course, even if only the part of the bone that had nothing on it was under the roof, I agree 100% that the house would become tamei meit. But I do not agree that if you have less than a kizayit, that you could somehow magically combine them under the same ohel, because less than a kizayit is not going to be useful as a yad. Now, that sounds very much like the way that Rav was limiting it, but Rav, remember, has limited it, actually, not in a way that fits both of these. So, let's assume, what is the case? We've got two possibilities. We could be dealing with Yad, and we could be dealing with Shomer. How is that? Well, we could be dealing with Yad if what we're talking about is a small bone. It doesn't really have marrow, which would be metame min hameit, but it has some actual remaining muscle fibers and so on. Or we could be talking about a large bone, which would be contain marrow, and then that bone would be a shomer. Now, if you ask me, how can one end of a bone be a shomer on marrow on the other side of the bone? The answer to that is very simple. Once the bone is compromised, the shmira of the bone is compromised. So if there's an opening or a crack anywhere on this bone, then the marrow is doomed. And therefore, it would be a shomer throughout. So now tell me what the case would be according to Rav, because he's got a problem. The problem is this. If the case is dealing with a bone that has remains on its surface, so if it's referring to a yad, and neither of these atzamot are marrow containers, but each of them is a chatzi kizayis of basar hamet on the other side. So it's not a shomer, and it should just be a yad. So then the Tanakhama doesn't make sense, because according to Rav, a yad only kicks in if it's a kizayit. And over here, the Braita, according to the Tanakhama, is paskening that the yad will work to create tumas meis on pochot mi kizayit. So that doesn't seem to work. Okay, if we're talking about a shomer, so then it would mean that it's a bone that has marrow in it on the other end. So then we've got a problem, because then Kasha Seifa. Because why does Yehuda ben Nekusa hold that if it's a shomer, it's not going to be mitzaref? If Rav himself is made that a shomer will work on a shear of kiful, which is much less. So no matter how we cut it, whether we're talking about a yad or whether we're talking about a shomer, Rav is not going to be able to get away without turning this into a machlokas tanoim, in which he is only going according to one tana, which is not a pleasant position to be in. And we're going to have to bite the bullet. And of course, he's going to have to be one on one end or on the other. He can't have it both ways. He can say that the bone is a shomer, or he can say that the bone is a yad. But there's no way to make this bright to work that it would be dealing with either case. So if I want to, I could say the Braita is talking about a yad, and Rav would be exactly what Yehuda ben Nekusa was saying. Yehuda ben Nekusa was saying, if you don't have a kizayit, how can you be mitzarefit through a yad if a yad doesn't even work on a pochot mikizayit? So that would be Rav, beautifully, and he would have to bite the bullet and admit that he's only going according to Yehuda ben Nekusa, not according to the Achakam. Or Rav could say that the Braita is talking about a bone that has marrow, in which case it's a shomer, and then he would be going according to the Tanna Kamma, because he holds that if, he holds that if it's a shomer, then even the shear of a full, which is much less than a chatzi zayit, would be able to act as a shomer for it, and it would therefore be mitzarif. So one way or the other, but there's no way that this could be going with a bone that is either or, because we wouldn't have a machlokas that would be consistent with an either or. How about Rabbi Yochanan? After all, Rabbi Yochanan's got a problem with the Braita also, because according to Rabbi Yochanan, you have a yad for less than a kezias and a shomer for less than a kafol, and it doesn't make any difference. No matter what we're talking about, Yehuda ben Nakusa is completely wrong according to the Shita of Rabbi Yochanan, because he says, how could you possibly have a tziruf of two chatzizesim? Doesn't matter what we're talking about according to Rabbi Yochanan. If we're talking about yad, could certainly have a tziruf of two chatzizesim. And if we're talking about shomer, you can extra special for sure have a tziruf for shtei chatzizesim. So that's not going to make any sense, no matter what you do. It's for sure not going to work out like Yehuda ben Akusa. But how could it work out according to Rabbi Yochanan? Because if it's for sure not going to work out like Yehuda ben Akusa, how could it work out even according to the Tanna Kamma? Well, according to the Tanna Kamma, he would say it's talking about kula biyad, which is true even for pochot mikizayit. Why is that? I mean, according to him, what's the difference if it was a yad or a shomer? I'll tell you what the difference is. The mashma'ut over here is that we're limiting the case to two bones, which would mean each one had a chatzizayit. If it were talking about a shomer, why would we have limited it to two bones? We could have said a number of bones that would be sticking into the same ohel would be able to be mevi tuma if all together they're under the ohel. Because, I mean, after all, if each one had a quarter of a zayit, wouldn't that work? Yes, because it would still be larger than a kafol. So why did we have to limit the case? Therefore, we've got to be talking to a case of yad, where Rabbi Yochanan said, yesh yad lepochot mikizayit, but he didn't say yesh yad lepochot mikafol. And therefore, I understand it works out okay according to the hymn, Aliba de Tanna Kamma, if we're talking about a yad, and he is going, of course, according to Tanna Kamma, because he can't possibly go according to Yehuda ben Akusa. Okay, so it turns out that there now would be three shitot, because we would also have Rav, and we'd have Rabbi Yochanan, and we'd have Rabbi Yehuda ben Akusa, the way that Rabbi Yochanan just understood him. So Tashma, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Kulit Chiyeshav HaKizayit Basan. Now we've got a little bit of a problem. Up until now,
does he want to start a new daf?
Oh, good heavens, I totally forgot.
That this is to be appended to the previous.
No. You weren't here. Warp. Yes. Okay. I started the daf seven lines up and I'm at base. Toshma. Rabbi Yehuda Omer. Now here we've got a problem because here the actual braita specifies which bone we're talking about. And it talks about a thigh bone. Now a kulit is a large bone that definitely does have marrow. So if we limited it to a kulit, that could be very significant. So a kulit jiyesha lea kizayit basar goreret kulale tum'a. The entire long bone, no matter how long it is, if it's got a little bit of altogether, it just has little bits of a basar, and then there's other things that are connected to it or attached to it. So then, as long as you have a total of a kebetza, then anything that touches any part of such a bone becomes tamei as tumas erchlin, because the bone is going to serve as a yad to what is there. That's what it seems to be saying. So it'll bring everything on it into contact with a source of tumah. Acherim omrim, whereas others, and usually that, of course, is Rabbi Meir, there's a Tana Kama, so to speak, over here. It's the Chachomim. So the Acherim Omrim, that actually, even if it does not have on it more than a fold, I mean, even there, it would be Goreret Kula Latuma, and everything that's on it would be actually Mitami. So how does Rav understand this? Because if we're talking about a yad, so then the last part that says, according to the Acherim, that then would be a shear of kaful, that's against Rav. Rav says you need to have a kisayin, and that works out only in the Reisha, according to the Shita, not of the Acherim. The Ibe Shomer, so then Rabbi Yehuda says in the Reisha that you need to have a kizayit, but even Rav is made that even a kafol is enough if it's acting as a shomer. So I'm very confused. It doesn't work out no matter what. You're right. It doesn't work out according to both. Either we're going to have to say that the machlokas between Rabbi Meir, let's call him the Acherim, machlokas between the Acherim and Rabbi Yehuda is whether yesh yad lepachot mikizayit. And the Enoch Inami, if that's the case, then he would be going according to Rabbi Yehuda, who says you got to have a kezayit in order to have a yad. So then he would work out not like the Acherim, but he would work out at least like Rabbi Yehuda. Or he could say that we're talking about specifically the kulit, and therefore it's talking about a bone that is a shomer because it's a marrowed bone. And Rav, who says that there's a shomer for even a kaful, he would be going according to the Acherim. We'll say you don't need a kizayit. It says Beferish, the same shir is Rav, right? Kaful. Works out beautifully. Rabbi Yochanan would say to you, no. If we're talking about a kulit, then we're talking about a shomer. And therefore, it's going according to the Acherim. Now, this doesn't make sense on the surface. It's going according to the Acherim, who say keful, which doesn't make any sense, because Rabbi Yochanan himself said even the pachot be keful. So how could he be going like the Acherim? Now, obviously, he could have said that we're talking about a yad, and you do need a keful, because Rabbi Yochanan only said yesh yad le pachot be kezayit. He never said the pachot be keful. The reason that Rabbi Yochanan does not want to say that is because, as we're about to see, Rabbi Yochanan takes the fact that the Braita specified a kulit very seriously, because a kulit has marrow. Why specify a kulit? Must be because that's good for what it's coming to tell me. So he doesn't want to say the simple solution, that it's talking about a yad, and then he would be going like Rabbi Meir, which would be preferable. So he feels that he's stuck. Okay, so if I'm stuck, it's got to be talking about a shomer. And then it's only going to work out according to the Acherim, and you don't need a kaful. But what? But the Acherim say you do need a kaful. Rabbi Yochanan, you said that yesh shomer lepachot mikaful. And now you're saying, and this works out perfectly well, according to me, if I go like the Acherim who say you do need a kaful. But come on. A kaful ka'amri. Yeah. But they don't mean it. They're kidding around. Well, because since the Tana Kama, Rabbi Yehuda, said a kezayit, they said, you don't need a kezayit, even if you had a kaful. But they don't mean you need a kaful. Even less than a kaful would be fine. It's just they wanted to say it's absurd to say that you need a kezayit. You could even have a kaful. And Rabbi Yochanan, as we're going to see, Rabbi Yochanan is not just making this up ad hoc to be able to work things out for himself, that it would be going according to the Acherim. It turns out that Rabbi Yochanan actually was taught that that was the sheet of the Acherim when he was taught over the Braita originally. So, Aydi Tekoma Tanakama Shiura, since Rabbi Yehuda mentions a Kizayit, so they say, even a Kafu, but it doesn't need even a Kafu. Omar Rova. Daika Nami to Bishomaraskin, and it's clear that Rabbi Yochanan has got a very good reason for saying that we're talking about a shomer, because why else would the Braita specify a kulit? A kulit is a very large bone and definitely has marrow, and therefore, since it says a kulit, Shema Amino, that we're talking about a shomer and not a yad. Now, even though that ought to force Rav into the same position. But we wanted Rav to paskin here like Rav Yehuda because the halacha is like Rav Yehuda. And because of that, it was, even though it's forced to say the kulit was acting as a yad, we can explain it away by saying that even though it's a very long bone, it still qualifies as a yad from the other side, the tzad hasheni. Itma. Now, we also have a machlokas over here about this shear of the acherim. Do the acherim mean seriously a kafu? Or were they just responding to the Tanakama's shear of the kizai? That itself is a machlokas. Rabbi Chanina Amar, zeo shear. The Rabbi Meir Shita brought here as the acherim, who says if it's a kafu, then it's going to be maybe Tuma, is a real shear. It means kaful. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan says, no, ain't ze shear. It's not meant as a shear. What do you mean, ain't ze shear? Kaful is a shear. I mean, it's a well-known shear. Hakatani kaful. Yes, but that's only because, as we said, the truth is, even a mashahu, it makes something to be a shomer. And this was the Kabbalah that Rabbi Yochanan actually had, that the kaful is not a shear. As I say, he didn't just say it ad hoc. It was the way that he was taught this right and machlokas by his Rebbe. Toshma. Another problem that we find here is from another Mishnah in Uktzin. And this was the case where we were talking about a pod of peas. Actually, it was beans, but whatever, of kidney oat. So, the Mishnah is talking about over there a case of a sharbit alone. And a sharbit is not considered to be foodstuff. It's only useful to protect the beans inside. And because of that, it will not be makabel tuma. But the Mishnah claims that if there's even a single bean inside of it, that it's going to be tummy. So it says, even Timara Achat, it was one case, in the case of Kitnios, Gargir Achat, all it needs is one thing to protect, and then it's considered to be Makabal Tuma itself. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, unless the shiur that is being protected by the sharbit is the size of a fool, then it's not going to be Metame as a Shomer. But if it's the sharbit, the size of a kidney, then it is. So strangely, if it's bigger, it's not a shomer. But if it's smaller, it's makabel tuma. But not because of a shomer, but because it seems to be saying b'mashmishan. He wants to be able to use. Now there's two ways of understanding this word mashmishan. Mashmishan sounds like usage, tashmish. But mishmush also means touching things. So if the girsa is indeed mashmish, then what it means is he wants that sharvit to keep people's paws off of it. That's the point. So he wants to protect it from touching, from people's touching. If it was talking about a yad usage, then it would say tashmishan. He would want it in order to be able to pick this up because it's hard to get your fingers around these small little bits. So anyway, it seems that over here, even a small little piece of nothing is good enough to have a shomer to keep it from people's touching it, right? No. It's talking over here. You don't understand the case. I know what made you confused. That word, mashmish, that's confusing because it sounds like a shomer. But actually, we're going to change that, Girsa. And the way Rav Acha Bar Rava explained this is that it's talking about a kulcha. A kulcha is where you've got like a branch that's got a lot of these pods growing off of it. You can hold the pods, all of them. So you have 10 different pods. You can hold them with the stem of the branch. Now, that means that you're talking about a yad, where even though each little bit may be less than the kashira that you need for a yad, but since you've got so many of them, you've got a full kizayit. And therefore, there's no problem. Because if we're talking about the kulcha, And we're not talking about the sharbit. We're not talking about the problem of the touching. We're talking about carrying it. We're talking, he says that later, and we're going to get to that later. But here, too, we could use the same idea. We're talking about the kulcha, and it's nothing to do with protecting it. And we have to change the gears, of course, because when it says mashmishan, it doesn't mean mashmishan. It means tashmishan, which, I mean, you know, you could slip in the same word. But basically, we're changing what we assume to be the meaning. He wants to be able to have convenient usage, not to use something to protect it from being touched. So that would work out perfectly well, because if we're talking about the kulcha, we can easily have a kizayit, because we've got a lot of sharbitin attached to the kulcha, and therefore we're not even worried about the shear. Another stira to Rav, Toshma. The Tanan of Rabbi Yishmael, remember our very, very chaviv drosha of Rabbi Yishmael. I'll call Zera Zerua Asher Yizarea. What did we learn from there? Kiderach Shibnei Adam Motziin. It would be the way people take it out to be planted. Now, there's certainly, before they would eat it, they would take off the husks or the shells, but not before planting. So therefore, the Torah is telling me that the shear that we're talking about over here, or perhaps the tuma that we're talking about over here, would be on a piece of wheat with a husk, a piece of wheat with its husk. Heck, that's not the shear of a kafu. That's tiny. A saora beklipata? A lentil? A dashim beklipata? I mean, I understand. This is the basis of the whole halacha. And Rav is talking about something that's against the pasuk. I mean, I don't understand how does he know that there's a din of yad if he doesn't hold of the pasuk, and if the pasuk is talking about things that are smaller. So where does he come off saying that if here it says even a tiny lentil, which is much smaller than a kefil, a lentil is enough to have a shomer? How could Rav say it needs to be the shear of a kefil? Oh, because obviously, here we're talking about a birya. Now, Rabosa, the din of a birya, that is the nogea, the halacha of not kosher food, in terms of ochlin to orin and ochlin to mein, does not include plants. Remember, a single wheat, we learned before, the Shulchan Aruch speaks out, is never called a birya. Only some type of animal life is called birya. But this is not talking about the question of kashrut. This is talking about the chashivut of a shiur in terms of Kabbalah's tuma. Over there, there's no particular meaning to animal life. And because of that, here the shiur of birya means that whatever it is, it's a shomer because this organism requires that shmirah. There, obviously, if this is the way it's made, so then this is its shomer. It would be a little bit silly to start arguing with evolution and say, well, we don't really need a shomer. I mean, it's absurd. So, of course, it's a birya. So then, of course, Rav is made of that that's a shomer. That's given that it's a shomer, for heaven's sakes. Okay, so now we don't have any rayas against Rav, but we've had to actually accept the fact that he's not going to work out according to all of the shittas of the Tannaim. So now Rav Hoshaya had a question. This is a fascinating question. The logic of this question is so beautiful. It's like one of these conundrums. You've got a shomer. Okay, so a shomer is going to be valuable by virtue of the fact that it is a protection for a particular item, right? Now, suppose that item is not the size of a kibetza. And you have another item just like it, with its own shomer, which is also not the size of a kibetza. And in fact, if you wouldn't have the shomer on both of them, even if you'd put it all together, you wouldn't have a kibetza. But now, if you put the whole thing together, combining the small amount of foodstuff with the shomrim on each one of them, you have just a kibetza. The problem is that one of these shomrim is only a shomer on one piece, and the other of the shomrim is only a shomer on the other piece. Can you be mitzaref, the shmirah of one piece, to the other piece? It's a brilliant question. Because be'etzem, the Shomer is not really the Shiur. It's just we're being Mitzarif the Shomer to the Shiur. But over here, how can we be Mitzarif the Shomer of half of it to the other half, which it's not being Shomer on? So maybe in terms of the Tziruf, you can't combine the two Chatzisesim. Is that brilliant? What a gorgeous question. So in other words, do we view the Tziruf of the Shomer to mean that it literally becomes like the full equivalent of the Eichlin? Or is it Mitzarev only because it is acting as the Shomer? Which case, how can I use the other Shmirah to be Mitzarev? Okay. So when he says to Shomrim, I described the case in the way that the Gemara is going to come out. But when you just hear that question, can two shomrim be mitzarev, it sounds like you've got one layer of skin above the other, and if you put the two together, you end up with a kezayit. So let's talk about a case in which you have a peanut. So the peanut has a shomer, which is the hard shell, and then you crack open the hard shell, and underneath the hard shell, you have those annoying membranes around the peanuts, and those are shomrim, a second level of protection, right? So now, is that what he means? Can you add the hard shell, which is for the two peanuts inside of the peanut, and now combine them and together with the two softer shells around the peanuts, and now get all together a shear of a kibbetz said to be makabel tuma? Very practical question. And that's how we first took it. But it's no good. It's pretty, but it's no good. Like many pretty things. What a shame. But okay, so how would it work? It can't be that case. Why? Because umi ika shomer al gabe shomer? The rule is that we learned from a Mishnah in Uktzin that there is no such thing as one shomer acting as a shomer on top of another shomer. Where's that? Rabbi Yehuda Omer. Rabbi Yehuda says in this Mishnah, if you take a look at an onion, so you've got three levels of onions. Let's start with the top. We've got three peels, which we're calling klipot. But they're not really peels. What happens is that you take off the top, which is sort of breakable, and then you get this messed up, discolored leaf underneath, which you also don't eat directly. And then you get to the first level of edible onion, but it's usually sort of dirty and it's got tears in it. So you throw that off also in the modern consumer society in which we only like perfect onion. Okay. So what's the din of those three peels? So Rabbi Yehuda says, look, the inside peel isn't really a peel. You're making it into a peel because you like throwing it out. But the fact is, it's part of the onion. And therefore, even if it's got holes in it, it's going to be mekabel tuma because it does not have to be a shomer. And therefore, whether it's useful as a shomer or not is irrelevant because it's edible. And therefore, the penimit ben shlema, ben kidura, doesn't matter if it's got a hole, it doesn't matter if it's full, it is certainly mitzarif, because it's part of the onion, whether you like it or not. Now, the emtsa'it, which is right above it, it is actually a shomer if it's whole. So if it's shlema, then it is mitzarefet to the shiur, because it protects the onion underneath. If it's kidura, and it's got a hole in it, which is going to allow dirt and insects to get in, then that's not called very good shmirah, is it? And therefore, it's not mitzarev. The outside one is actually never going to be mitzarev. Why? Because it's a shomer on top of the middle one, which is the real shomer. So what do we see from there? That there is no such thing as a shomer agabe shomer. So what was Rav Hoshaya talking about if he wasn't talking about our pretty case of peanuts? No, Rav Hoshaya was talking about a case where there was a shomer on two half pieces of food. Shomer ochel shechil koko mibayla. You had, let's say you had a piece that was on top of an entire large piece of food, and then you cut it into two. So kima dahai lo megina hai. Bahai lo megina hai lo mitztarefe. Do we say that since the part that's on section one does not protect section two, it cannot be mitzarev because two doesn't protect one either? Or do we say that given the Haimegin Adidei and Haimegin Adidei, each one is a valid shomer on whatever it's being shomer, and therefore it is mitztarif. Oh, good question. Let's go back to the first perek of Uktzin and see whether we can get the answer from there. Tashma. So there we're talking about the case that we had before of the Sharbit. And here is where we're actually going to get to that discussion, where the Sharbit contains, according to the Mishnah, even this little tiny bit, and that makes it roy to be Mekabel Tuma. And Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah says, no, it's only if it has a small piece in it. But if it's the size of a pole, then it's not going to be mitame, and only if it's a tiny kitnit, then mipnei shirotze b'mashmishan, since he wants to have it there. So again, we think this means b'mashmishan. He wants to have it there in order to protect it from people's paws touching it. Therefore, it's considered to be a shomer. Now, this sharvit is actually being mitztarev, according to this Mishnah, with the tiny dash that's in it. The problem is that one sharvit is not going to be the size of a kibetza, even if it had its full quota of peas or beans inside of it. So therefore, what's Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah talking about? He means if you take a bunch of sharvitim together, you can combine them all, even though each sharvit is only a shomer on its beans in its pod, nonetheless, you can combine them all to equal a kibetza. That seems to be the whole point. Omer Rav Acha, and here is where Rav Acha b'Rei d'Rava actually changed the meaning that we said before, Kini Omer, here is where he was Omer, that it's talking about a kulcha, it's talking about where we've got a stem that's got a lot of these pots that are attached to it. We're not talking about a shomer. We're talking about a yad. And even though it said to protect them from mishmush, that was a misunderstanding. Mishmush was not the meaning. Tashmish was the meaning. And therefore, when you pick it up with one kulcha, you've got 100 of these pots attached to it, you do have a shear of a kibetza. Yes, Rav Barnea. Your hand is up electronically. Did you mean that? You just meant to say good morning? Okay. You meant to say I give up? Passing. Tashma. Okay, let's see if we can bring a raya from the Braita. Again, the Braita, one of our favorites in this area, the Tana Tevei Rabbi Shmuel, I'll call Zera Zerua Sheizareya. Kederech shebnei adam motziim lezriyah, chita beklipata, saora beklipata, adashim beklipata. Now, there's certainly no shear of a kibetza in a single chita, a single adasha, so obviously it must mean take chitim together with their klipa, put together between all of the separate chitim and klipot that you have, a total of a kibetza, and you have a shear. Okay, so you see that each one of these shomrim is going to provide protection on a tiny little piece, and yet, even though it's not protecting the other pieces, we're going to be able to put them all together into one big kibetza, which obviously means that we are able to be mitzarif separate shomrim on separate pieces into one large shear of a kibetza. There's a clear-cut proof. And here again, Kiryomer of Acha b'Rei d'Rava. We're talking about the equivalent of a kulcha mishumiyah, not literally, but the equivalent of a kulcha mishum yad, because we can also be talking about a shidra mishum shomer, not mishum yad. It's a very loose comparison, and it's confusing. Because what over here the Gemara is trying to say is that if you take an entire, let's say we can easily see this on corn on the cob. So if you've got corn on the cob, so there you literally have one shomer that protects all of the various pieces on the cob, right? Now let's take a look at an ear of grain, an entire ear of grain. So let's say we've got 20 of these chitim, or sorim, They're all wrapped around a cup, essentially, which becomes the straw, which is on the bottom of it. Now, if you pull out one of those, they all become loose, and therefore they all start scattering because you mess up the pressure by which they're all held together on that stalk. And therefore, they're all protecting each other, not to be scattered to the wind. In which case, every single one of those chitim is actually part of the same shmirah. They're all shomer on each other. And therefore, it's similar to the kulcha bishum yad in the sense that it's all one shomer, and it's not a kulcha, but it's a shidra. So hachinami bishidra, that's the spine of the ear that it's growing on, and it would be each one being shomer on the other. Well, now, wait a minute. I mean, that's not the physical reality, is it? I mean, I understand that if you pull out the bottom wheat, that the top ends up being loosened and falls out. But I do not see, when you take off the top kernels, the bottom kernels aren't loosened because of the top kernels. The other way around, yes, but I mean, you're saying that they protect each other. Bishlama iliyata tzricha iletatiyata. I understand why the ones on top need the ones on the bottom, because if the ones on the bottom are taken out, then everything is going to be loosened. But I don't understand in what way are the bottom ones dependent at all on the top ones. You're right. I didn't mean all of them. I mean one row. If you loosen one row, one horizontal row, that is a shomer. They're all for sure going to fall out. And there you can find a shira vekebetza. What? Man, this sure ain't no chazanish kebetza, let me tell you. I ain't never seen one row on an ear of chita. That's the size of a kebetza, maybe 10 of them, but certainly not one. What are you talking about? Miika kebetza osle bechad dara? Can you ever find that amount of a shear on one single row of wheat kernels? Well, yes, if it's in the land of Oz. And in the land of Oz, I mean, we know Shimon ben Shetach, in his years, the Gemara says that the corn was as high as an elephant's eye, and the kernels were as big as a kidney of a shore, and some say a shor agadol. So if you've got chita the size of a kulia of a shor agadol, so heck, you could certainly have a gabetza. Well, you know what? Now that we're talking about magic, you don't even need to have the answer of a shomer. Just one tiny chita could be the size of a kaloya of a shor agadol if we're talking about Shimon ben Shetach land. And that must be what the Mishnah would be referring to. So once you're ready to talk about Oz, you might as well talk about one single chita. So hashta de atita lahachi, if you're desperate enough to go to Oz, then chod achita nami could be talking about the chitim of Shimon ben Shetach. Lovely. Gufa. Anyway, let's go back to the case that we heard at the beginning. And that was a case of shnei atzamot, referring to the atzamot of a mate. And they have a chatzi zayit, and you put the side that doesn't have any basar on it, hichnis roshehem hashniyim, I should say, their other side, into one house, one room, such that the bayit is ma'hil aleihem. So we said the bayit is tameh, because it's mitzareif. And Yehuda ben Akusa said, Bishum Rabbi Yaakov, how is that possible? How can you be mitzareif pochus mikazayis? There's no din of tziruf on less than a kezayit. So, note that they were only arguing because it was less than the kezayit, right? But if there would be a kezayit, then there's clearly armada that the bone is a yad. Okay. But the question is, how strong does a yad have to be in order to be metame? So Reish Lakish says, look, it mentions over here, Dafka an Etzem. You know why? Because even though it's easier to find a situation in which a hair, let's say, so you have one strand of hair that is attached to a Kezayit Basar, that would be a bigger Chiddush. When you have to talk about a bone, because a hair is not strong enough to be a Yad. And if you would put the hair underneath the Bayit, it would be tar and would not be enough to have a Yad in the house. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan says, no, it's not true. Afilu Nima have a Yad. Doesn't need to be particularly strong. Even one bit of hair would be considered to be a Yad. Because you can always maybe lift up. We're going to see that there's a concept of a mat that is built of separate pieces. So if you would have matted hair, and it is now being brought into the house, so then it would certainly be enough to pick up the buzzer to which it's attached. So it'll turn out that the question is whether, since a mat can work, does a piece of the mat function as a part of the mat? So now we've got a Mishnah that we're actually going to get up to next week about an or sheyesh alav kezayit basar. So you have a piece of skin that has a kezayit basar that is attached to it. If you touch nogea betziv hayotze, and you've got a little bit of actual flesh that is sticking out of it, or if you have sa'ara shekinegda, or you have a hair which is keneged, it's not so clear why it has to be specifically keneged if it's talking about the act of a yad, but fine. Nonetheless, Rabbi Yochanan holds it to show me. A lot of discussion about how to explain away the kenegdo. So then, if you touch it, it's tummy. And I'm assuming that that means if you touch a hair, it would be mevi tuma to you because it's a yad, right? No, says Rish Lakish. As I've said to you, hair is not a yad. What we're talking about over here is a shomer. That's why it's specified that it has to be something which is keneged the hair. So that additional hair serves as a additional protection. That's what hair is there for. But wait a minute. The hair is a protection on top of the skin. And I thought you said a shomer, agabe shomer, is not considered to be a shomer at all. So how could hair growing on skin possibly be a shomer in terms of the meat that's on the other side of the skin if it's a shomer agabe shomer? Umi'ika shomer agabe shomer? This makes no sense. Says Rish Lakish. Of course it makes sense. What do you think? Hair grows on top of the skin? Hair grows from follicles that go through the skin. So it directly is attached to, goes all the way through the dermis, and it actually touches the basar itself. So, chulei mechalcha. What? Says Rav Acha bar Yaakov. If you're right, nobody has a kosher tefillin. Huh? That's right. Because it says, uchtav tam, the ktiva has to be tama. And if there's a bunch of holes underneath the ktiva, that's not ktiva tama, that's ktiva on holes. Why holes? Because the hair goes straight through the skin, you said, and there's always hide in the hair. I mean, like, come on, man. So then everybody's tefillin, you just puzzled. Oh my gosh, we're going to have to develop new species of kosher animals that have no hair on their hide. This is tough, but there's a lot of money in it. Anyway, so Matkifla Rav Acha bar Yaakov, then Elamiata Tfilin Echikatvinan, how does anybody write a kosher tefillin? It's not going to be kosher because all of the cloth is full of holes. Get yourself a magnifying glass and you'll see that you're tefillin or puzzle. Well, obviously, Rav Acha bar Yaakov has forgotten a rather important rule about ktivat tama. Ishtamitate, he must have forgotten. Hodi Amre b'maravar, maybe he never learned this, did? That kol nekep, shadyo over alav, Anal Nekev, another wonderful. Thank heavens that Gavi's pen is magic, and therefore he doesn't have to actually stop driving. And it's a claw. If it's a hole, that if you put the ink, and it's really thick ink, if the ink goes over the hole and doesn't drop into the hole, that's not called a hole. So that's one way of understanding the Mishnah. Now, I could say that actually it's not talking about a shomer. I could say it's talking actually about a yad, and it's the same as the yad, like Rabbi Eloi said, in the case of you have Melaish ben Hamla'im. Now, he was talking about a different situation in which you have things that are not capable. You try lifting up a piece of wheat with one of those little tiny hairs that come, it just pulls off. So how could we have a case where there was a case where it was acting as a yad because he touched the hair on the wheat and the wheat became tame? So Rabbi Loi explained it over there as referring to the case in which there is a lot of those little tiny hairs. And if you pick up, let's say, 10 of them, and then they don't pull off, then they're strong enough to support the little seed. So here, too, what we could be talking about over here is b'nima shebina nimin. We're not talking about a single hair, which I said is not capable of acting as a yad. We're talking about a matted hair in which, since the mat as a whole can obviously be strong enough to lift up an awful lot, then therefore even a single piece of that mat is actually considered to be the chelik of the yad, and it would be metame. Where did Rabbi Loi say that? He said that again on the Mishnah in Uktzin, where it says over there, Melaisha bishibolim, those little hairs that are on the ears of chitim and seorim, they are mitamin u'mitamim, so they act as a yad to bring tuma or to convey tuma out, but they're not considered to be shomrim, and they're not mitztaref. So each one of those is apparently a yad. And we asked over there, malai, lamai chazi, what good is it? If you try to pick up a chita with one of those little hairs, it just pulls right off in your fingers. Omer Rabbi Eloi, that's where Rabbi Eloi says, what are we referring to? Malai shebein amalaim. The same thing could be true over here with hair. Shebein, the hair is a matted hair. That would be the pshat. Lishna achrina, and another way, amrila, that Rabbi Yochanan asked, indeed, Rish Lakish from the Mishnah, and the Mishnah said that if you have a sa'ar that's coming out of the nevela, it would be metame, which l'chora means bishum yad, tainas Rabbi Yochanan, and Rish Lakish says no. It says over your dafka if it's kineged habasar, in which case it's bishum shomer. And in this version, Rish Lakish brought a raya to Rabbi Yochanan, and he said, well, of course it's a shomer. How did you read the Mishnah? Hachi nami mistava. Of course it's a shomer, the bishum shomer, because the izah gadaitach bishum yad. What did you think? That it was being metame mishum yad. How could one strand of hair possibly be considered a yad? L'may chazya, it'll just tear off. And Rabbi Yochanan in this version was the one who answered that it's talking about Kedom Rav Eloi, b'malai shebein amalaim, hokinami, b'malai shebein animim, b'nima shebein animim. And in this version we also asked, to where did Rabbi Eloi say it? And we went through the Mishnah in Uktzin, Ahod etznan amalai shebeshibolim, mitamin u'mitamin, but are not mitstarfin mishim shomer. And we asked over there, how is that possible? Malai, Lamai Chazi, Omar Rabbi Loi, Bimalai Shebeina Milaim. That is where he actually said it. So that was the Machlokas, Rabbi Yochanan Rish Lakish. So far. So far, so good. But, Bezrat Hashem, if the good Lord spares us, we will be able to finish this up tomorrow, Halavai. And meanwhile, we have some very important new information about Yadayim and about Shomrim. both machlokesin between the Amoraim and between the Tanoim about whether there even is a shear, a minimum shear, for a use of a shomer. We also learned out of Nafkamina, what would that shear be? Could it be even less than a full or dafka full? Is there a shear of a kizayit specifically for yad? And would it be possible to be mitzaref actual parts of shomrim that are being shomer on a piece of a mixture, but not on the whole of the mixture? And we also spoke about what is the required actual tensile strength of something that's going to be acting as a yad. And that brought us into a submachlokas about whether if you have a group of fibers that are all acting as a way in which something could be picked up, does that mean that each one of the individual fibers are considered to be a yad? Or do they only act in concert? And if you try to separate them out, then you're not able to use it as a yad. So far, those are the fascinating issues that we've extended our discussion of Yadayim and Shomrim into, and looking forward to continuing Bezrat Hashem tomorrow. Kol Tov then, and wishing good news for Klal Yisrael, good news for Knesset Yisrael, good news for every Ben Yisrael, and a wonderful day.